Blog Talk Radio.
Francisco. Ironically, this is one of the best things Dianne Feinstein ever did. And one of the reasons was so that the USS Missouri we've got the Blue Angels overhead, and I nothing I can do about it, and people love it. Excuse me. So wait till they pass. Dianne Feinstein wanted the USS Missouri ported here, but could not be ported here because there's nuclear waste that has been dumped, according to my sources, that were dumped in San Francisco Bay. And we know for a fact, and I can't deny it, that nuclear waste in 32-gallon jug were dumped off of the Farallones, which is about 20 miles offshore from San Francisco. And those cans are leaking. So that's a problem. But I guess the USS Missouri is preserved, and it's at Pearl Harbor. It's docked there forever, along with the Arizona. This is my country would be appropriate for all of these guys that I'm about to get into, political leaders, and they were political animals. These were political leaders who served in their country's navies. Now, we have the two Roosevelts. Teddy Roosevelt was assistant SecNav, or Secretary of the Navy, from 1897 to 98. Now, he was the one, he foresaw a war with Spain. In fact, I think he wanted it. And the Secretary of the Navy, his boss, Josephus Daniels, was away. So Teddy Roosevelt issued an order to Admiral Dewey, who was in Hong Kong, to sail for the Philippines and Manila. And so that's what Dewey did, and it was the Battle of Manila Bay, one of the two major naval battles in the Spanish-American War, a splendid little war is what Teddy Roosevelt called it. Anyway, we did have an interview with Patrick Butler, who I went to school with, where he was a couple years ahead of me, and his great uncle was on the deck with Admiral Dewey at the Battle of Manila Bay, in which Admiral, I think, Cervera, his wooden ships were sunk. Spain was at the end of its 300-year run. All these empires have their runs. We had the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the British Empire, the Spanish Empire, and now it's our empire, and we're being challenged. The next naval person, as he used to call himself, was Winston Churchill. He was first Lord of the Admiral in 19 Admiralty. That's what the British call their Navy Department. He was first Lord the first time in 1913, and there's a photo of him with the Kaiser who was the cousin of King George V. And then the Gallipoli mess, which was Churchill's thought that he could, he did this once before with the Balkans, but Churchill thought if we could force, if the British and French navies could force an entrance in the Dardanelles, they would knock out Turkey in World War One. Well, it was a failure because they, for several reasons, they had a lot of their ships were sunk by mines. And there was a lot of discouragement, and also there was what some military historians consider weak leadership. Anyway, Churchill left, was forced out of the Admiralty, and he fought in, he went to France and fought in the trenches or near the trenches. Now, prior to World War II, in the Neville Chamberlain government, Winston, who had been railing against the Nazis and the Bolsheviks, he used to say they should have been strangled in their cradle. Here they come again. I can't compete with the Jets. Anyway, Churchill was named First Lord of the Admiral again, and so the word went out to the Royal Navy's ships, Winston's back. Now, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he came in 1913, as Undersecretary of the Navy, and he served till 1920. He's always fond of the Navy. He used to wear a cape, and of course, one of the most famous meetings with Churchill and Roosevelt was on board the Prince of Wales and I think the Augusta. Excuse me, and they met in off of Newfoundland in the bay there, and of course, that was the first time Churchill. Would believe be the first time that Churchill and FDR had met. Now, the Prince of Wales was the Britain's newest battleship, and it fought. It was damaged in the battle with the Bismarck. They still had their. They didn't go on a shakedown cruise. They had their some workmen on board when the Prince of Wales went out to meet the Bismarck, the mighty Bismarck, and of course the Prince of Wales was damaged, and that was a forerunner of what was to come. The Prince of Wales and the Repulse were two ships were sent to Singapore to show the British flag, the Union Jack, and presumably to help defend Singapore from the Japs who were invading. However, the British didn't have enough air power and airplanes out in the Far East. And the Japanese had plenty with their Zeros, and the Japanese Air Force sank both the Prince of Wales battleship and I think the Repulse. And of course, there weren't any survivors. The Japanese don't pick up survivors, or didn't at that time. And it was a great disaster for Churchill, but anyway, he carried on. Now, the next admiral. He was a Hungarian from an aristocratic family, and believe it or not, Austria had a navy. They had their ships in the Adriatic Sea. Even though Austria and Hungary are landlocked, of course, all they do, they have the Danube rivers, but was the at that time, turn of the century, was the Habsburg Empire, and was also known as the dual monarchy. And Admiral Horthy had served in the Austrian navy. And in 1920, there was a coup, and he was a conservative, and he took over as the head of Hungary. Now, at the end of he lasted till 1944 when Germany was being defeated, Germany and Austria, and so he fled. He escaped trial at Nuremberg, and he fled to Portugal, where he died, I think, in 1981. The next admiral who served in his navy was Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz. He was the creator of the Wolfpack submarines. He had served in submarines in World War One, and he succeeded Adolf Hitler, who committed suicide, although there's some people who think that Hitler did commit suicide. Those are really on the fringe people, fringe edge. Anyway, Hitler named Karl Dönitz as his successor, as the next Führer, and he only lasted a week, from May 1st, 1945 to May 7th, and then Keitel, Field Marshal Keitel signed the surrender documents, and I think Dönitz signed the others, and he was tried at Nuremberg. He got 10 years, but he was I guess Serb had good time. Let's put it that way. I think that's what they call it. Now, a lot of people don't know this about our American presidents. And besides Teddy Roosevelt and FDR, JFK, John F. Kennedy, served in the Navy. And, of course, the famous movie PT-109, there's some controversy about that, that he should have been court-martialed. But, of course, Joseph Kennedy had a lot of influence with FDR, even though FDR was peed off at him because he was believed to be pro-Nazi. Believe it or not, Richard Nixon served in the Navy, and he was called Iron Butt. And after he served in World War II, he went to Duke Law School, where he got his law degree. Gerald Ford, who was actually, that was his adopted name, he was born Gerald King. He served in the U.S. Navy. LBJ served very briefly, and FDR said, "No, I need you in Washington, so leave the Navy and come back and serve in Congress." These were the people that served in World War II. Our last president was James Earl Carter, who was a submariner who was in, the 50s U.S. Navy. So these are some of the little things we don't hear about. Of our political leaders. And Ronald Reagan, who defeated Carter, Ronald Reagan served in the Army in World War II. Bush the First, he served in the U.S. Navy. He was a pilot. He was 18 years old. Oh, forgive me, the Bush is going to we can't deny the Bush is their service. How could I forget that one? Anyway, we had that. That one, and he was shot down, or he had to ditch his plane. He was rescued by a submarine. He was 18 years old. He later married Barbara Bush. They met at a cotillion, and she said she had set her eyes on him and decided he was going to be her man. George Bush, the first's son, was supposed to have served in the Air Force Reserve. There's some controversy about that, but. And then, of course, Clinton got out of the draft. Reportedly, Clinton was seen when he went to Russia, St. Petersburg, or Leningrad, as was known at that time, reportedly burned his draft card, and the KGB got photos of that. And now we have Mr. O, Obama, some questions about his... whether he has a the Selective Service record. When you're 18, as I understand it, whether you're 18 and you're male in the United States, here comes Blue Angels again, you have to register within 30 days with the Selective Service. The draft law is still on the books. We used to call it the Hershey Law, and we didn't think about Hershey chocolate. We thought of General Louis Hershey, who ran Selective Service for too many years. So there's a question about that. And, of course, Mitt Romney did not serve. He was a missionary in France, and ironically, he was injured in a car collision with a Roman Catholic priest. That's not talked about. But Mormons are, I guess, excused from registering with the draft and from serving in the U.S. military, whatever service, Army, Air Force, Marines. Marines are part of the Navy, even though they don't like to admit it. And, of course, the Coast Guard, which some people have served in. So this is the history. Now, back in our early history, we had the Civil War generals, McKinley. He wasn't a general, but we had Garfield, who served, in Hayes. And Abraham Lincoln was in the Black Hawk War, but he served briefly. And, of course, we had George Washington was a general, but we didn't have any Navy people in the early part of our country's history until Teddy Roosevelt came to Washington. Next week, we'll be back tomorrow, and we're going to deal with how ethnics were treated in the U.S. Navy. Blacks is a good... there's a couple of good movies showing how blacks were served. They were stewards, and Filipinos were also stewards. And it wasn't until very recently, for Filipinos who wanted to legally immigrate to the United States, they signed up in the U.S. Navy, and there's complaints that they are clannish. They stick together in the dining hall and all, the mess hall, as it's called. So they weren't treated very well. And, of course, blacks were segregated even in FDR's administration, FDR as commander-in-chief. Now, as I understand it, we just had a USS, United States aircraft carrier, the America, which was dedicated here yesterday. Mr. O was in town, but he was collecting money. And as commander-in-chief, it's surprising that he didn't show up at the commissioning of that ship. George Bush did, and several of our presidents, or sent their wives to crack the bottle of champagne over the bow of the ship. So people wondered why the commander-in-chief didn't show up for Fleet Week here in San Francisco. So it's just part of his history. We did a special edit of Eternal Father. We're going to end with that, and I think it's appropriate because wherever there has been disasters involving sailors of any country, there's one thing. Every sailor thinks, you know, even though he fought against another sailor in the war and because their country may have been dirty or warlike, a sailor will rescue another sailor. Now, ironically, in the Battle of the Atlantic, in which the Bismarck came out and, of course, it sank the Hood and damaged the Prince of Wales, the Bismarck screwed up, and because the admiral on the ship Lutyens, the British couldn't find the Bismarck, and his Admiral Lutyens was his birthday, and he got a congratulatory message from the Kriegsmarine, and he sent back another message, and that's how the British picked it up with their radar finding, and so the British were able to locate him in the Atlantic, and of course they sent their planes out, and ironically, the Bismarck's armament was geared to the new planes, the Spitfires, but the British had these, what they call wingbats, these canvas planes from World War One, and the Germans' Navy guns on the Bismarck weren't calibrated to shoot those planes down because of their slower speed. And so one of the British planes got a lucky hit on the rudder of the Bismarck, and it got stuck permanently, and was going round and round in circles. The Germans sent down divers to try to unstick it, and it didn't work. And so it was a sitting duck. And of course, the British sent every ship they could out to pound that ship back into the sea, and this is exactly what happened. Now, after the ship was destroyed, was sinking, or they say there may have been a mine set on the ship to sink it, so the British couldn't capture it and tow it. The sailors, it was a very cold May in the North Atlantic, and the sailors, of course, jumped overboard and were to be picked up and become prisoners of the British. Now, one of the ships, which was picking up the German sailors, was told that there was a German submarine in the area, and so the captain decided he couldn't pick up any more sailors. And this is an instance where it's controversial, where he sailed away and all these guys froze to death and drowned. So these things do happen in war. And, of course, the Japanese did horrible things to our sailors. They would capture some of our sailors and tie chains around them and then throw them into the sea. And do other things, shoot them, machine gun them to death. And those that they did take as prisoners worked in the mines in Japan. In fact, some of our military personnel were prisoners at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but they survived. So we did a special edit for Fleet Week, Eternal Father, and we'll play that instead of politics and poker for a change. We will be back tomorrow at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time, and also we'll talk about Ness Aquino, who was a young Filipino citizen, 17 years old. He legally immigrated to the United States, legally went to school here, and then joined the U.S. Army and served in Germany, served honorably. Then he came back to San Francisco, married an American, and had one son, and also became a true community activist. And so we're going to honor him and honor the Filipinos, because it's supposed to be Filipino American Month here in San Francisco. So we're going to end with Eternal Father, the special edit that I did. We'll be back tomorrow at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. And, of course, we got to remember George Bush the First, because he did serve honorably in World War II as a pilot. And we will continue with our Fleet Week memorial, commemoration, I should say. And I had a couple of my uncles were in the Navy. And although my father was in the Army and my brother was in the Army and the Air Force, that's another story. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow at 2:30 Pacific Standard Time, and we've just worked on some of our videos, and we'll be uploading them. Peter Paul Brizola, good night, and tomorrow's Columbus Day. He was also an admiral.